Ladies and gentlemen, what is up? It is Tuesday night, and it's time for another episode of Inside the Game. I am DJ Wheat, joined by our three co-hosts, all representing a different race. Guys, what is up? Happy to be here again, and, you know, have another show with you guys.
What's up, man?
I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We're getting better. That was a little bit, you know, Greg. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, what's up? We got, look at that. No closet for pain user there. He totally looks like a professional in a nice shirt and everything. I love it. You're the man.
Not me.
Dog. You're the man. Jeff, you look as professional as you always look, Greg. We get consistency out of Greg. So there we go.
Soon, guys. I'll be sitting upright and not in like a.
Greg's got the best out to Greg it for one of our casts.
Dude.
I actually still don't have it. I forgot it at Skew's house when I was staying there, and I haven't gotten it back yet.
What? What? It's on eBay already.
Greg.
Right.
Just go to Goodwill and get another terrible 1980s motorcycle jacket.
Yeah, it might be the same thing, guys. So, yeah, what's up? We're going to jump right into stuff, guys. We're going to jump right into it. None of this BS. We're going to get the business out of the way. For, of course, welcome. This is episode 3. For anyone who's not tuned in before, we've got, of course, Pain User representing the Terran. We've got Idra representing the Zerg and In Control representing the Protoss. I'm totally not biased at all. In this little scenario, so
yeah, right. Represent commentators.
What,
you're a little Zerg brotato.
Whatever, dude. That's so not true. You are just such
so
a
so true.
You are such.
Every time Idra makes a little pointer for you, you're just like, oh,
yeah, that is
right.
Oh my god, getting called out already on Inside the Game. I love it. All right, so May 17th, 2011, thank you to SteelSeries and Six Pool Gaming, our sponsors over here at Inside the Game. And we're going to start right off with our first segment, guys, and we talked a little bit about it. We've only done one of these, but it's now time to do an official Under the Microscope with the Sentries. Now, in episode one, you guys had a really good discussion about the force field, talking about, you know, just a lot about how, in some cases, it seems like it can be super powerful. We talked about the double-edged sword that the force field is, and maybe some different changes that could happen with that. So we're going to expand it out a little bit and put the entire sentry underneath the microscope. Now, this ranges everything from Guardian Shield, force field hallucination, how much gas it costs, using it in different matchups. I think it's only appropriate if we have In Control, just basically, you know, give us your under the microscope of the sentry. When you look under that microscope and you see the sentry as a Protoss player, tell us what that unit is to you and why you love it.
We did talk about the sentry last week, right?
No, we did.
A little bit.
Just a little tiny bit.
Kind of whined about force field for a little while.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. The sentry is an interesting unit for Protoss. A lot of the early game tactics and kind of allowing yourself to make yourself economically get around the corner and kind of cut corners. Like, you're not going to have unit for unit the same kind of strength a Marauder Marine composition will have in the early game. You won't be able to take on roaches or masslings in the early game. So it's the force field and the sentry more specifically that allows you to say, not only can I perhaps divide up those forces and take them on, but I can prevent them from doing things like getting access to my natural while I'm advancing my tech beyond perhaps I should, like in a straight up fight I would otherwise be able to, or it allows you to do things like create more pressure on them than just raw units would as well, right? Like eventually a stalker will get whittled down and die, a zealot will get whittled down and die, but when you have sentries, they gain mana and they do things like block ramps, or they can shut down areas or sequester units to small little pockets so that you can pick them off individually for free if you have ranges in their melee units, or you can actually even just stack them on top of each other in AI and really mess up their ability to do anything. So the sentry essentially allows you to kind of dictate whether or not you want to receive aggression and how you're going to receive it, or how you want to give aggression and how you're going to give it. And then moving into the mid and late game, the sentry represents the essential ability to throw up a guardian shield and kind of have a protective shield over your army. Someone is typing like a biatch right now.
Who, yeah, it's Pain User.
Oh, that's coming through.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's like, he's doing work in the background
this
too.
This mic is terrible. No, I'm not doing work. I'm just Oh, it's picking up everything, huh?
He's writing down notes.
It's a really good shirt, though, Taylor.
there's a lot of stuff going on around me.
You look very handsome.
It's all good.
Thanks,
it's all
appreciate good.
Airplanes flying by and stuff.
I have a question, you know, from a Zerg player to a Protoss user specifically, okay. Jeff, is that the thought of spending 100 gas on a unit is just like, it's crazy.
Yeah,
because you know I'm like, oh my god, I got to build one more muta. It's like 100 gas. It's like you know, and so it's crazy that the Sentry is such a early game unit, especially when it is so gas heavy. But it also means that you have to protect these units so well. But I mean, just the thought of how much gas it costs when you make a Sentry, is that literally like your little baby?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because there's a couple other components to that too that make it. An interesting unit that people don't necessarily think about. It is gas intensive, which means that you, typically speaking, you don't have as many units as your opponents. So there's like the easy assumption that, well, I got a bunch of sentries, I can go attack anything. But actually, you have fewer units because they cut into the much more lucrative, more difficult to obtain gas resource. But also, they don't have high DPS. So your army doesn't actually have a lot of attack power when it's just Zealot, Stalker, and Sentry. And of course it has attack power, but what I mean by that is that it doesn't necessarily have a lot of DPS. So once the force field ability is used up, or you've misused it even, if you're in a straight-up fight with your opponent, 9 times out of 10, they're actually doing more damage than you ever are. So a lot of people throw away early game or even mid-game advantages or situations because they just take for granted that they've made units, they have force fields, so now they're invincible. But in fact, if they miscue those force fields or if they run out of them, they're more vulnerable than they ever were before because of how expensive the units are and how fragile they are. So a lot of my game development has come in realizing that I've spent 700 or 800 gas right in the first 6-7 minutes on observers, or excuse me, sentry. Wow, that'd be a lot of observers, but on sentries. So I don't necessarily have the ability to just A move across the map or flood units at somebody. I have to get into certain situations to utilize them, and that's a really important element.
Okay, so let's move on and get another perspective on it. Idra, why don't you talk about, you know, we did talk a little bit about force fields and even how it's changing a little bit how the Zerg has been playing. We even saw you recently in competition games go with Burrowed Roaches to kind of deal with force fields. So talk a little bit to me about the Sentry, not necessarily even the force field, you know, whether it's Guardian Shield or Hallucination or whatever, from a Zerg perspective.
Well, Hallucination is always, it's pretty good scouting. It's not quite as good anymore now that Warkit research takes longer, so it comes out a little bit later. You don't get the kind of crucial timing where you see how many roaches they're making. Just generally speaking, I actually think, I'd like, kind of like to talk about the fact that it's 100 gas. I think that's actually a plus for it, because it means it's so cheap in minerals that you can establish your infrastructure, which is almost purely minerals, so gateways and the Nexus, maybe a forge. And then build up these sentries. And then the fact that you get them so early and they have such defensive power, so you still survive, you can get that expansion up. You can get those gateways up. Invest all of your gas into these sentries. Be completely safe because force field is so powerful defensively. And then because you got them early and they are a spellcaster, later on in the game, you have such a huge mana pool that you move out with literally 40 force fields, which just turns out 3 or 4 battles your way that you should lose otherwise. So I think the 100 gas thing is a pretty big bonus for Protoss, if anything. Otherwise, Guardian Shield is obviously huge, more so versus Terran than versus Zerg, really, just because Hydras are so bad at CVP. Force Field is obviously, just everything comes down to Force Field. That's the entirety of the unit. The ability to block ramps, just always make terrain in your favor, cut off half your army, make chokes anywhere you want. Force Field is probably the most powerful spell in the game, I'd say. And on a tier 1.5 unit.
You've made comments about force fields even on Inside the Game in the past. But let me ask you a game question. Do the force fields have to be there for this game to be balanced?
Right now, certainly.
Okay.
Protoss Warpgate units are too weak. If force field weren't as powerful as it were, they would just absolutely get destroyed.
Okay. So And that also goes out to all you guys that are like, oh, Idra force fields, don't there you go. Now let's go move on to pain user two. Pain user, from a Terran perspective, the Sentry. Talk to me about it.
I mean, it's an amazing unit. I agree with what Idris said about Force Field. I definitely think it's, like, bar none, the strongest spell in the game. Not in that it, like, kills things directly, but, like, its indirect effects. It can reduce the overall effectiveness of your army by however many units they manage to cut off or however many units they manage to trap within range of their units. So they can partition your army into different segments, pick off pieces of it, and then, I mean, Guardian Shield is absolutely amazing. That's, like, essentially chitinous plating for your entire army. Coupled with that.
I mean, is Guardian Shield definitely... I mean obviously, the force field's rough. So, yeah, talk to me about Guardian Shield.
Think about it, though. If you break it down like that, it's essentially chitinous plating for the Ultralisk for your entire army for the duration of the spell. Like, plus two armor for your whole army is huge, especially against units like... Zerglings, Marines, anything with a super high repetition attack, super high rate of fire with low damage. I mean, and you couple that with early armor upgrades, especially against Terran, it makes Zealots real strong against Marines. And they're already, like, a real beefy unit to begin with. So, yeah, I think Guardian Shield's amazing, but Force Field's definitely even stronger than that. And then Hallucinate, I know Idra kind of brushed that off, but... I think it's a really good ability for scouting. I mean, you're essentially not going to get caught with anything if you get Hallucinate. It's a full map scout. You can use it pretty much anytime you want for a low energy cost. And I think it's really effective and underused. And you can also use it to warp units into high ground positions if you have a proxy pylon somewhere. So all of the spells for the Sentry are versatile. They have multiple, well, except for Guardian Shield, they have multiple uses, both offensively and defensively, and it's a relatively cheap unit that gets stronger over time, and as it accumulates energy, it just becomes more and more powerful. And in numbers, they become more and more powerful as well. Like, the more force fields, the merrier.
Right.
It's not an issue.
So can we go back to Hallucination? Obviously, even amongst the hosts that we've got here, we've had situations where we go back to that game at MLG where we had the hallucinated units. And, you know, in all seriousness, I mean, laugh all you want, pain user, but in all seriousness, this to me seems like a viable strategy in different scenarios where, you know, you can absolutely make your opponent think that you've got this many units, or just have a different targeting where detection maybe isn't immediately available.
From a spectator point of view, or whatever,
I mean, is it viable, or is that kind of a thing just something that's going to only work once or twice, and then...
I'm just laughing because Greg literally just, like, doesn't give a fuck. Like, he'll just leave games, and he doesn't care.
That's
like,
true,
I find
too.
That hilarious, like... I don't know. I can't do that. I'm too competitive, I guess. But he's also really competitive, so it's weird that he can just leave games, like, on a whim like that.
Sorry, it broke my spirit.
Well, let's talk about it. I mean, let's go to In Control. Jeff, have you ever won a game using hallucinated units?
Hallucinated units, no, but I've warped into high ground using hallucination.
Has it ever, like, run past your, you know, strategic brain that,
yeah,
oh, maybe if I throw in a few fake immortals here, he'll try to be targeting those down? And
it's actually kind of unfortunate because it comes from the Sentry, and because it costs 100 mana to use, you're better off using Guardian Shield or Force Field 9 times out of 10 as opposed to... Because each hallucination is individual, and Brood War used to be double, so you could,
right,
like, warp in. You could hallucinate 10 zealots, but you'd get 20, you know, or excuse me, whatever. One zealot 10 times, so you have 20 hallucinated zealots. So that makes a huge difference. But in StarCraft II, if I spend 100 mana hallucinating, like, 3 or 4 Colossus, sometimes it has pretty good effect. I'm not here to say that it's, like, absolutely ridiculous and stupid and you'd never use it. I could see situations where their Vikings would shoot them, or they'd get fungal growth, and that would be pretty cool. But you're better off having that extra 8 force fields. You're better off having 2 more Guardian Shields, I feel, in more situations.
Okay. I mean, you know, definitely an issue of mana in that case. And, oh, well, look at that. Our video has gone.
Great. It's all of us, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Everyone just went. It's like Skype. Microsoft bought Skype.
God, you know, agrees with me, man.
There's a, while you're doing that.
Guess what? I've got I prepared for a moment just like this. I prepared for a moment.
Oh, boy.
And I've got placement here.
Microsoft bought Skype.
Yeah,
okay,
yes,
I gotta get something ready.
Noodles are crazy, folks. All right. I really don't know what's happened there, but there we go. All right, continuing on as noodles are crazy, people. Just remember that. I want to talk a little bit about the evolution of the Sentry. It looks like people are slowly coming back here, because I remember, I'm like thinking back to some of these beta games, and I remember some times where people would throw down one force field, a second force field, and then a third force field, and people would go, "Oh my God, those were the most amazing things that we've ever seen." Like those three force fields. And now, as you mentioned, Jeff, going out with 40 force fields, and then just being able to drop literally a line, and as it was creating that terrain. We didn't see that early on in beta, and the Sentry has come a long way. Do any of you guys want to comment on, the evolution of the Sentry as it's gone from beta to retail?
I just feel like people have gotten better at using it, to be honest.
Yeah, the only big thing was just when people realized you could use them as an offensive unit in battle instead of just defensively early on.
Yeah.
I remember when I was back still playing Protoss, I remember the first game I realized you could just split their entire army in half. I was like, hey, this is pretty good.
I totally agree. They were originally just used purely defensively, and then people were like, oh, I can push to your choke and force an engagement and cut your army in half and force shield your ramp and prevent reinforcements from coming, especially against Zerg. When Protoss started force fielding the natural ramp against Zerg, things started getting really brutal with the early timing pushes and stuff like that. People just didn't really know how to deal with it.
And you guys, Jeff? Are you just here with us, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he is.
How do you restart your webcam?
There's a little...
I just hit my video twice. The little video icon.
A little blue video thing. A little blue video thing. There you go.
Hello.
All right.
I don't see either Jeff or...
Yeah, I've got Jeff. Idra's having some problems regaining transmission here. Just turn it off for a second, Idra. Give it, like, count to 10, like I'm a Dell rep. Go ahead and just turn that cam
unplug
off.
It, then plug it back in.
And count to 10, then go ahead and turn it back on. It'll be great. Jeff, did you have a comment on the evolution, of the Sentry?
I think one of the interesting things is it used to be a unit that people would only make like three or four of, and now we see some Protosses making like 11 of them in some matchups. That's kind of cool. Just that they're like, oh my God, this does so much stuff. I need to have more of this stuff. It's amazing.
If you had to get rid of one of the spells that the Sentry has, would it be Hallucination, hands down?
Yeah, and there's nobody that would tell you otherwise.
Unless they're just silly.
Unless they're paid to say otherwise by Blizzard or something. Everyone would be like,
I would get rid of
Force. I have a $100 bill, a $1,000 bill, and a $10 bill. You can have two of them. Which will it be?
That's true.
I will have a $10 bill, please.
Yeah.
Why?
That's kind of like Hallucination.
Little package, man.
All right. Well, we have Idra. I don't know what's going on over there. Maybe you want to just drop the call and call back.
So that's what I had to do last time.
Yeah, that's what we had to see Pain User do. So we'll let Idra come back, and then we're going to talk about you're doing it wrong. And chat about that for a little bit. And then open up the... Oh, look at that. Perfection. Noodles are no longer crazy. I get to take
they
it.
They are. They're always crazy.
All right. Any final comments on the Sentry? I kind of like... one of my favorite things is catching a Sentry, like, out all on its own, just not doing anything and killing it. I was going to ask Pain User one question, talking a little bit about how you have to deal with the Force Fields and the Guardian Shield being very effective against your army. Do you ever find yourself, like, in a situation where you're like, I've got to target Sentries and get them down or using certain units to go after them?
It got to a point where I started target fire or attempting to target fire the Guardian Shield Sentry. It's a much harder in late game, like really big battles, but in the early game and mid game, you can definitely pick off the sentry that has Guardian Shield up, and that makes a world of difference. And then also, like, just dancing in and out and trying to bait force fields and get them to waste their energy, or fake like you're going to commit and get them to burn energy on a Guardian Shield and then just run away till it expires. Stuff like that is really important for dealing with it. You just need to just be really, 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 really careful with your army.
And we've definitely seen more of that. And that seems to be one of the ways that people have been dealing with it. When I say that, I mean baiting different things. You see in a lot of situations trying to get those Guardian Shields to pop, getting a few force fields thrown out and not, you know, losing any particular units in that sort of an engagement. And all right. So unless there's any final comments, we're going to go ahead and move on.
Word. I think you're awesome, Wheat.
Oh, that was a great comment, man. You're awesome. Want to remind everyone, you're doing it wrong. You can send email over to itg@onemoregame.tv. What do you feel like you're doing wrong? What don't you know how to do? Let these guys talk about it tonight. I've got one that I really, really like. I see it asked several times in our emails, Twitters, etc. And anytime I see something that's asked multiple times, I'm like, this is something that probably more than these five people want to know about. And that is going to be carpet bombing and medevac dropping properly, or, you know, because you use them so much, Jeff, you know, warp prism drops and etc., etc.
Yeah.
But we have seen, obviously – for the Terran, being able to drop out of the medevac effectively, very, very important. For the Zerg, being able to drop banelings on an army, onto a clump of stalkers, etc. We've seen this used a lot more. And a lot of people, they're not quite sure how to do it. So I don't know who wants to try to give us the mechanical explanation for how it's done, but I have created a little map that I think I can bring up, and I've got a bunch of overlords and a bunch of banelings and a few medevacs and a few marines. So maybe you could just tell me, and I'll follow your instructions, and this will be instructional that way.
The easiest is just move command, click on it, hit, and then roll. Click on the overlord, hit D, and then click on the overlord. Yeah. As it's moving, that's how I do it. And you just get quicker at moving or clicking on each one. It's really simple.
Now, because some people, there's, where you can, like, just click on the overlord for sort of timing it out versus just, like, dropping them in a single line, right?
What do you mean about timing it out?
I mean, like, can't you also move command and then hit D and then just, like, click on the individual overlords to drop out the banelings?
You have to click D in each time.
No,
yeah.
Just click on the overlord. And it'll move.
D and click on the overlord.
It'll move where you tell it to move, and it drops them. Like this. Yeah, so see my fingers dropping?
So we're going to have six max.
All right.
One thing to avoid, though.
Yes.
Overlords puke shit, first of all. They puke. Puke everything.
Go ahead.
God, you're so random. Don't ever tell all your stuff to drop in one spot, because actually in StarCraft 2, they'll hover and then they'll like kind of adjust and move away and then drop down, but it's like the most ineffective drop you could possibly do.
So, Jeff, you said that you go ahead and move, right? Yeah. And then what do you do? So I'm actually doing it right
now. Let's say, okay, here we go.
You don't want them to clump up like that.
Here's what you want to drop on. Here's your overlord. You tell it to go here, but while it's passing over this, you click D and then on the overlord, and it'll drop it on its way past it.
I like a visual representation there.
Yeah,
that's
multiple tools, man.
I don't know what's better, the iPhone or in game. So I'm moving over.
iPhone. I just took a pull,
and I'm hitting D, and then I'm clicking on the overlord, and there it goes. I'm blowing up Marines, you guys. You're having no fun, but I just destroyed a bunch of Marines. Now, as far as medevacs go, pain user, you know, sometimes it's better to drop all your units in one area if you're trying to, like, hide or mask a drop, but other times you want to spread them out. Are you doing the exact same thing? Move D and then hitting the medevac?
Yeah. And, I mean, you just want to be, like, really careful with it. One thing that people should definitely practice is after you've issued your drop command and you're dropping your parachute line of Marines, you need to know how to issue a stop command and cancel all those units that you have already queued up dropping out and then pull them back and instantly pick them up and put them back in. So people should just play around with it. If you're not used to it and you don't know how to use it, just do what Wheat's doing, essentially. Just play around with it for a couple hours and you'll figure it all out. The mechanics really aren't that hard. It's just a matter of, like, doing it and figuring it out.
If you have one or two medevacs, too, you don't have to do the parachute line. You can just drop in one spot, but just make sure they're slightly separated. Otherwise, they'll delay again.
Now,
yeah, the only time you really need to use the parachute type drop is if, like, you want to get a good spread behind a mineral line, or there's, like, zealots on the ground and that's it, then you probably don't want to drop in one spot. You want to, like, do the, what were you calling it, Wheat?
What?
Like, that's it, the carpet bombing.
Carpet bombing? Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
With the Banelings, carpet bombing.
It's a lot more important with Zerg because generally you have a ton of overlords dropping, and then if you just tell them to drop in one place, it'll happen like Jeff said. They'll try and spread out before dropping units. So that's
and
what's really
important.
And it makes
you super susceptible to any kind of AE.
Yeah.
And like, and are you always using Idra, the basically just the D move? Like move?
Yeah, move, then D, click, D. Or click, D, click.
And so you just kind of, like, individually have your overlords drop when you want them to, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. There we go. So for those guys, even if there was only five of them that didn't know how to do it, D-click. It's actually a lot
easier. It's really important for Zerg. It's really important for Zerg.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, since we're kind of talking about it, maybe you can talk about different positions or different scenarios, Idra, where you do use it as Zerg, or where someone may want to go, now would be a great time for me to institute or put in some drops.
The two biggest scenarios are if you're using Baneling drops as part of a frontal attack, like you're attacking them and then you're moving in overlords with Banelings to drop on their army as your ground army is engaging. And then you do the moving drop technique we just talked about. And the important thing to keep in mind there is if you can afford to, in terms of actions, you want to go after Templars and Sentries, just because Banelings will destroy them immediately and they're very high, very efficient units. They do a lot of damage for their cost. So a lot of the times you'll be too busy casting fungals and burrow moving under force fields and stuff like that. But if you can, you want to chase sentries and templars with your overlords. But yeah, it's just the normal moving drop thing there. And then the other scenario where it often happens is if you're doing like Roach Hydra drops inside Protoss's main and they actually have an army there, then you want to do the moving drops. So you end up with an arc in front of their Colossus just to minimize AoE. But otherwise, I usually just queue up and tell them where to drop.
Okay, I want to let's talk situational, because it seems like in some cases we've actually seen some drops on big groups of stalkers. Are you seeing any use in using this more often, or is it really only situational?
With Banelings, certainly. Baneling drops are always good, just because it makes it a lot more likely that you're actually going to hit a ton of units, making the Banelings cost efficient. Dropping in like Roach Hydra is still pretty good because it negates force fields and it negates stalker range to an extent. Stalkers outrange roaches. So you just want the roaches in as close as possible. And it doesn't really hurt to have the Hydra there either. So yeah, it's good, but mostly just with Baneling drops. You don't usually want to drop Roach Hydra in just because you'll lose more of them in the overlords before they actually drop.
Right. Okay. And how about those warp prisms, Jeff?
Dude. No, they're terrible. I mean, they're not terrible. They're just not good for the traditional drop play.
You know what? I think it's actually... Holy shit, man. There's a party over there in Pain User's place.
I'm at work, man, for those of you that don't know. I can't. I mean, I'm lucky they're letting me do this here. You know, it's pretty cool. But next time I'm going to get a mic with a boom and a way better mic.
Word.
They have closets there, right?
No. We need one of those in the back.
We do have this room. That's what's going on right now. Like, we just got this new room opened up, so they're moving all the tables and chairs in and out. And then that's going to be our, like, the esports department. We're going to have control over that room, so I'll be able to go back there and do the cast from there next time.
Nice. Nice. Totally. That's awesome. I see Husky.
That is HD.
I mean HD, rather. Sorry.
Sorry, buddy.
Sorry. That was a snap foo.
That was.
That was.
Yo, what up? You know, Jeff, I want to actually transition a little bit talking about warp prisms. And, you know, we did get a couple of emails here. And when we come back from a very, very short break, I have an email that was specifically to you that talks about warp prisms. And I'm going to find it here in just a moment.
Here sounds
it
comes. Good.
I'm going to find it. And it's a long one, but I think you are kind of wanting to maybe talk about it a little bit. Then we'll just open up the phone lines. So, guys, don't go anywhere. We're going to just take a short little JTV commercial break. When we come back, we'll find out what would happen if Battle.net had email. We'll be right back.
Yo, I'm just going to mute my mic in between when I'm not talking. All right.
Word. I think that'll work. All right, guys, welcome back. It's time for our second half of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined by Pain User, Idra, and In Control. Are you ready for this doozy here, Jeff? In Control, Robinson, as I unmute you. Well, what the? Do I hear the stream through?
No, IGN is just very jocular.
Oh. Pain User, they have fun over there, man. Okay. That's what they do. Fun. It's paradise.
Are you ready? This is going to be a long one.
Wait, what, you guys can still hear me?
What? Yeah. Yeah.
It's so dumb.
We can. We love you. We love you. Okay, here we go. I have a question for In Control. I'm going to read this in how I imagine he... If it be possible... Oh my gosh, you got to mute that thing for a second while I read this dramatically. Pain User. I have a question for In Control. If it'd be possible to address it in the next show, if not, I completely understand, blah, blah, blah. I've been doing a good amount of analysis in my copious spare time on the warp gate mechanic and have come to the conclusion that it is being extremely underused in its effectiveness. copious.
Good use of copious.
Spare time. It was. And, you know, he actually put quotes around copious, so I'm not sure what that means.
So maybe it's not real.
Yeah, it's like the 5 minutes I've put into researching this is all good. People are using warp gates in three ways currently. Timing-based attacks with a large influx of units due to the front-loaded nature of the production, four six-gate attacks, shortening reinforcement distances, and quick replenishment when maxed out and banking resources. However, because people focus so much on making use of robotics units, it is impossible to take advantage of the real power of the warp gate mechanic in the mid to late game. I've been experimenting with warp prism speed buff and getting 2 to 3 warp prisms at the same time, flying around and doing Archon DT drops and warping in DT and Zealot sentries in multiple locations at the same time as harassment to essentially fill the role of Phoenix for a pin without having to spend that amount of gas. And then it says the gas goes into upgrades and research and High Templar and Archons instead. It has a lot more power behind the harass while having less weakness. You are also less open to large timings when you are weak after opening Phoenix, and fast warp prisms are actually quite difficult to pin down. They're about as durable as a Phoenix is and are cheap to remake if you lose one. It also avoids the mobility issue of robotics units and being forced to keep your army balled up. So, he says, how does InControl feel about heavy warp prism play, 2 to 3 at a time, with only gateway units, no robo or Stargate units other than the warp prism? Now, hold on. Before you make any sort of statement, remember, copious amounts of spare time were put into this research, Jeff.
We're putting into writing it.
Make him proud.
First and foremost, I think it's awesome that people are experimenting with stuff. I mean, I know the easy reply is just be like, that's stupid, it'll never work, don't ever do that. But that's not really going to further StarCraft II or Protoss, Terran, or Zerg play. You really just need to experiment with that kind of crap. So this guy has copious amounts of time, and he's using it for that. So first off, hats off to him, and thank you for sending the question in. But do I think that mass warp gate strategy replacing the Phoenix and not advancing your tech beyond will ever replace Colossus and Phoenix and stuff? No, absolutely not. I think the warp prism is really fragile. When it turns into the pylon state, it's a fragile unit that's now extremely vulnerable, and it comes off the robo, which is an extremely important infrastructure building where you need those immortals, you need observers, you need Colossus to make your army have that strong ability for a stand-up fight. Do I think people should use warp prisms to harass? Absolutely. I think one player that specifically does that quite a bit is Inca, from the team formerly known as Lady Gamers, or LG, and he did a very good job of really utilizing that in his gameplay. It's just not good to use that much time on the robo to put that much weight into harass when Protoss has harass units, but it's not really a harass race, so to speak. Like, you can warp in DTs, and that's fantastic, but warping in dropping Archons and Zealots, okay, yeah, that's pretty good. But those units all, like, have more benefit, in my opinion, adding to the ball and adding protection to units like the Colossus, or being worked with conjunction with things like the Immortal or Templar. When you are shirking off like little segments of your army and you have a smaller Protoss death ball,
right,
then you don't have the ability to win a stand-up fight because you don't have things like the medevac that allow your basic units to be stronger. And you don't have like the Zerg reproduction ability where you can lose an army, but you come out with more.
So as something like that, based off your response, can never be sustainable in like pro level play.
If it were to be, it would be like a Kiwi Khaki type thing where they're counting on you having never seen it, and it's only going to work one game, and it's going to overwhelm you. It's not a like, this is what I do. It's that guy that makes mass warp prisms, and that's his strategy. There's no one that it's not. I don't think it'll ever work out that way.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, in some of the really awesome Protoss games we've seen in past, warp prisms has come into play. Like you say, Jeff, really fragile unit. Do you feel like we're ever going to see the true extent of how a warp prism can be used just based off of the state of the game?
Yeah, I think what will eventually happen is that like Zergs will use burrowed banelings against Terrans. Protoss, every single late game will involve a warp prism going around doing storm drops and warping in DTs, or even just raw zealots on mineral lines in all three of the matchups. And I think the double immortal drop in PvP in a warp prism behind the Colossus is another thing that we could see more of. So I think there's definitely stuff that's going to be like, we'll see more of the warp prism as the game advances. But I don't think it'll ever be the kind of thing you see mass warp prisms.
Right. Okay. Have you ever used warp prism speed?
Yeah, it's surprising. It makes it a alarmingly fast. Pretty cool.
Okay. Anyone else want to comment on War Prisoners before we open up the phone lines?
I mean, I'll comment on the first part of his question.
What's that?
He was talking about people massing gateways and banking resources. That's something a lot of Protoss players have started doing recently. I think it's actually really good.
Yeah,
for sure. So I think you'll be seeing a lot more of that recently because it actually didn't work out for Naniwa in his game in the TSL on Tal Barim, but he had like 1,800 banks, and he went up to, I think it was like 7 or 9 warp gates, and then just dumped all that money into Zealots, but I don't think he had charge yet at that point. And then Thorzane was just really patient with his bio and made some really huge EMPs happen. But you can definitely get a few production cycles off if you have enough warp gates and just really boost your army in a serious way, especially if it's after a fight. You can, if you have enough warp gates, you can instantly warp in, you know, like 20 supply worth of units. And that's something a lot of people don't take into account. And I think banking your resources is actually kind of a good thing with Protoss now, if you get good at the timings.
All right. Jeff, what's that? Do you agree? Do you think we're going to see that more often?
I'm not quite sure I agree with banking resources as a good thing. I think it's generally considered a strong RTS mechanic. Certainly in situations, it's okay to have like a round of units stockpiled, and then you chrono boost the gateways, and now you have an extra round. But if you can think far enough ahead and know that you need what you're building, it's usually better to have it as opposed to have the ability to make what you need.
I'm talking about like when you're max and you have like 20 warp gates, if you just
that's just kind of common sense. Like
that's
you get a bunch of money, you have gateways, of course.
Pain user, I thought you were saying like a little bit early game.
Of course, it's supposed to be more gateways.
When you're on like 2 or 3 base, just add a ridiculous amount of production, go up to like an obscene number of gates, and then fight, engage, trade, and then rebuild your army quicker than the Terran can even reinforce because his barracks are all queued up.
Okay.
When you're max, you're supposed to have more infrastructure for sure. Yeah.
And I think that came directly from the Inside the Game thread on Team Liquid. So thanks to that guy. And we are getting a lot of emails. And while I do open up the phone line, some guy in chat threw something out at me. Was like, hey, would you ask these guys this? Have you guys ever used those build order optimizers?
Nope.
Never.
No.
Nope. This is the build order optimizer right here, the noggin. All right. Well, there you go. Your answer. I'm sure he was hoping that you're going to be like, yeah, I think that XYZ build order optimizer is the absolute best and everyone should be using it. But apparently that's not going to happen. So we'll go ahead and open up the phone lines then. These guys don't use build order optimizers. Their brains are build order optimizers. You guys ready for some phone calls?
Yeah.
I don't know that you are. All right.
You ready? Let's get asked a bunch of questions.
Why are you so fucking bad at defending Hellions?
Oh, shit.
So I watched your stream and I determined that you're terrible at this thing.
Okay. All right. Well, they're already coming in. I'm going to go with the guy that actually got in first. We've got H-Star. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, man. How's everybody doing tonight?
Great.
We're doing great, H-Star.
Awesome.
Dude, cool stuff. Yo, thanks for taking my call. I'm a Masters League random player, and I pretty much worked my way up here using my in-game mechanics and like strong decision-making. And like basically by that, I mean I simply scout what my opponent is doing, and in quotes, I pretty much counter it, as Day 9 would say. And now that I'm playing all my games against Master League players, I find that like just countering what they're doing just doesn't cut it anymore because my enemies are like either macro machines or like all-in pieces of shit. So what I'm thinking is now that I have like an understanding of the game and I've worked out my mechanics to like a decent level, I should start working on my build orders. So this works directly to what you guys were just talking about, which is like the build order testers, whatever. So I've been emulating builds that pro players have been doing by analyzing replays, and to some extent it's been working, but I feel that I should be really developing build orders that work with my own style of play. So
What's
my question
your
to
question?
You. Yeah, so my question
He's
to you guys.
To Taylor? God, you're such a total.
So my question to is for all three of you guys, for each race's perspective, is what do I need to do to be coming up with my own build orders? Is it just timing, or how do I create my own like build order process, if you will?
Don't. They're standard builds for a reason. They're the best. Copy people.
That's not true, Idra. There is a player by the name of Artosis who you can put into the stream as we speak. And he is working on some stuff. So
that
your question
DT
is how to invent
good.
Builds? Are you asking us how to invent builds?
No, I'm asking you how I should go about developing a build.
Well, do you said, caller, hold on, let me try to bridge the gap here, because you were saying something to the effect of, you know, that worked for your play style, right?
Yeah, I need a build that works for my play style.
Well, what is your play style?
Well, it depends on the race I'm playing, right? If I'm Terran or Protoss, I do like a slow push towards the opponent. If I'm like Zerg, I just do an aggressive style after two bases.
There you go, guys. What does he need to do?
I mean,
how do you develop a build?
How do you develop a build? I think he's stumped in control.
Watch a replay. Watch a replay of a good player on the race and matchup that you want to develop the build for. Check it out. Try and mimic it as best you can, maybe against the computer a couple times. And then once you feel like a little bit comfortable with it, just get a picture of it in your head and then go try it on ladder a few times and just make adjustments when you lose and then keep improving upon it.
Trial and error.
Keep trying. Yeah, exactly. Keep trying to use that same build, because no matter what, if you have a standard build and you have it pretty down pat and you have the timings down, it's going to be so much more effective than doing, you know, per se, something you've never really tried before. It's going to be way more effective. So just work
on
your timings.
That's all I use the ladder for. I just do different builds all the time and see where they work and where they don't. That's it.
All right, H-Star, hopefully that helps out. Take care. Was he just like randomly throwing down like, oh, I've got 18 SCVs. Now seems like a good time to build a barracks, and he made it to Masters that way. Like, I'm not quite sure.
I don't know. I don't know what he's asking.
Well, I mean, I don't know. All right, let's.
I would imagine.
I did like
the day 9 advice though. Scout out your opponent, then counter it.
It's kind of like build units and win, you know. Let's take this next caller. Area code 510. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello, I'm a Masters League Terran player. Name's Andrew.
What's up, Andrew?
My problem is, like, when I'm playing games, it's not a problem. I'll be afraid to play games because I'll be just afraid to lose to players who are worse than me, or.
Andrew, do you get beat up at school? No. Seriously, dude. We talked about this.
Yeah, we did.
You know what? And I think In Control. Yeah, we talked. Well, not today, but we talked about it on a previous episode. And I think like In Control gave the best advice. Like, buy a different account and go in and don't give a fuck about it, man.
Yeah.
I mean. I guarantee you, I'm going to have to be screening this question because these guys don't even think about it. I think I realize.
I mean, no, it still pisses us off, like, tremendously.
Well, yeah, but you guys get pissed and you go back into the game, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's not like you stop playing. It's just like, oh, fuck, that guy's an idiot.
Everyone loses to people that are worse than them. It's unavoidable. If you're afraid of it, then you shouldn't be playing the game.
Those losses will only make you better, caller. Andrew?
Yeah, I just feel like if I'm not playing my best, like I'll do like a tiny mistake, I'll just get really angry and pissed off at myself.
I do too.
Buy a litter of kittens, and then every time you lose, crawl into a like pen with these kittens in it, and just like cuddle with them for a little while, then get out and go play some more. Promise you, you'll be a happier person. Probably a dirtier person too, though. And you might even squish a kitten. You don't want to cuddle too hard.
I was going to say,
don't roll around very much.
And when they turn into cats, that's really, like, that's shameless.
Yeah, he's super shameless with the promotion. He doesn't mess with us.
Anyways.
All right.
Turn into cats. Just let them loose in the neighborhood, though. That's my last piece of advice. Don't actually have a cat.
Hey, neuter or spay them first, please, for the love of God. True. Okay, let's do that. So, but that is good. All right, Andrew. Well, good luck with that. I hope it works out for you, man. I feel like there was an underlying. There was a call for help there. I think he's getting bullied at school.
Are you getting beat up at school?
Are you getting beat up at school, bro?
I don't know. Just the way he came at us, you know. I just. All right. Let's take our next caller. We got G. Rodriguez. Welcome to Inside the Game. What is up?
Hey, guys. I'm a Diamond Protoss. My name's Chromate on the ladder. And my question is for In Control. On PVZ, when you 3-gate fast expand, when he's taking, let's say, a third and a fourth, what is the proper response to that? Do you expand yourself or do you push and try to deny it? Or, yeah, what's the proper response?
It's a really good question. It's partially situational, but it's also kind of I'll say it's almost entirely situational. Like, if they're taking a third and a quick fourth, the Protoss can't keep pace with those kind of expansions. You're almost asked to have some form of aggression. You really shouldn't allow them to get on four base, like, right after their third. It's just super greedy. But generally speaking, when they expand, you as a Protoss player are safer and more encouraged to expand, in my opinion, because the longer the game goes, I feel like there's Protosses that play, their entire play style is based around getting 200-200, right? And that's not just them being lame. That's actually the Protoss race gets stronger as the upgrades increase, as they had, you know, they have those four Colossus, they mix Templar in, etc. Their army gets better the longer the game goes. So that's my piece of advice.
All right, so basically expand yourself.
You should lean towards expanding.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thank you, G. Rodriguez. We appreciate you calling into the show. Take our next caller here. Well, we're going to go with area code 610. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Thank you very much. I'm Steve. I'm a Diamond Terran, and this is my question is for Pain User. I'm having a lot of trouble TVZ to the point where I'm basically auto losing every game, and I'm trying out a bunch of different builds and openings, and nothing seems to be working. So I guess my question can be answered by anyone, really, but for more specifically for Pain User, how do I redevelop that matchup so I can actually start winning again?
Well, the one thing that's super important in TVZ is not to lose your first timing push. Like, you have to inflict damage with your first timing push. And for the time being, there's no real reason for you to be playing around, like, too much, because people generally have that matchup figured out. You want to go Marine Tank and then slowly transition into Medivacs. So try and get a solid Marine Tank timing push down and try and push across the map to a really advantageous position for you, or one that's really threatening for him, and kill as much creep as you can on the way, as many creep tumors as you can. And then you want to do a lot of damage with that first push, if not outright kill him. So a lot of TVZ relies on that first push and how much damage you do. So that would be my advice for that matchup. But yeah, you shouldn't really be playing around with too many crazy build orders right now, because Marine Tank is down pat, solid. It almost always works.
Heard they're good.
Yeah.
It's just also a mentality thing. Like, don't be so concerned with losing. Like, it's a part of the game. You're a Diamond player. You're not going to be taking down, you know, major tournaments or anything like that. And I don't mean that to slight you. I'm just saying, don't try. Like, this is a game, and it does take work. It's going to take years and years of practice and research and information gathering. So if you get frustrated and start saying, "Man, I can't win with anything," and then start operating on that mindset, it'll become contagious. And you'll eventually burn out. Like, just get excited about losing. Go find information. Read Liquipedia. Check out VODs. Watch shows like this, which, you know, you're already doing, so it's not like you're ignorant to this. But just make sure to monitor your mental state when you are playing StarCraft II, because you're in the developmental stage. You're growing with this game. If you stagnate that, then you're hurting your own experience.
No, I think that's a great point, In Control. Thanks for your call, sir.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
A nice day.
All right. You have a nice day. You have a nice day. All right. Let's take our next caller. Unknown phone number. Welcome to Inside the Game. any moment he's going to say something.
Yeah, hi, I was watching Idris' stream.
And I noticed that he didn't know. I mean, really, is
he never says good game when he loses. Is there a reason for that?
He's
like, strategy?
Right now he's like calling his friends over like, I got through. But I don't know. Like, I don't understand. Like, talking to your phone. Either that or it's like, hi, this is Jonathan from Home Security. Are you interested? I'm like, you son of a bitch. And we'll just take the next one. All right, we've got TJ joining us. TJ, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, what's up? This one's for Idra. In PvZ, with Protoss taking faster expansions, sometimes it's better just to take a quick third. What timing do you want to go around for that quick third?
Around 36 supply. Assuming it's warp gate expand, it's not a Nexus or Forge first, then yeah, around 36 supply after you put your Roach Warren up. You're still on Hatchery Tech. It's around the time you're getting whatever that Overlord timing is. You'll build up a little bit of minerals. It's often good to put down a creep tumor at that time because you can't spend all the larva. But yeah, right around 36 supply.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right, TJ. There you go. Quick and dirty right there. Next caller, area code 417. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, man. I have a question. Do you think stuck up to other
people? Hey, I have. Can you talk into your phone? Hello? Yeah. Okay. I can't hear you, so I'm just going to let that one go. I'm not messing around. I learned this from In Control. Just don't mess around, Wheat. Just fire them out. Eric code 662. What's up? Welcome to Inside the Game.
Awesome. Thanks for taking my call, guys. I really appreciate your show, so thanks for taking it. This question is just about patches. When a pretty big patch comes out, what do you do if there are some pretty big proposed changes? I know you can't really play the PTR a lot and still be competitive. So what do you do?
So
is
your,
by ear.
Is just your, think about it. Really. Yeah.
Okay. Greg wins MLG sometimes.
Yeah, the question is once the patch notes hit the PTR, like how does a player prepare for that? Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah, because as a professional gamer, I'm sure you can't devote your entire time to practicing on the new PTR. So you still got to practice what people play in the tournament. So what do you do as professional gamers?
It depends on how much time you have.
I just kind of think about how the changes will affect the game.
Let's take a vote, too. How many times have you guys played on the PTR?
Zero.
Zero? Okay, I played on it the first time it came out. That's it. So, you know, that I think that actually offers another question is, well, who the fuck is playing on the PTR?
Noobs.
They're like, these changes are awesome. You know, I think that's a question.
We all talk about it, and we all think about it. Like, obviously, we're not ignoring the patch notes. But for the most part, your time is better spent working with the game as is, because patch notes are erratic, too. They can come out, and then they'll be implemented, like, 3 months later or 2 days later, you know? So if you're spending time on the PTR where you're not getting real-time practice for tournaments you're playing in right now, and you're working on stuff that's not going to come out right now because... It's just putting the wagon. What is the saying? The wagon.
The cart before the wagon.
Cart before the wagon.
Cart before the oxen.
Apparently, none of us.
You got dysentery. You're dying on the Oregon Trail. I don't know.
You have drowned.
Looking over the horizon. You know what I mean?
Horse before the cart. Isn't that right? Is it the cart before the horse? Holy crap.
Your entire party has come down with malaria.
Well, we're all failing. So there you go, 662. It's more of a discussional thing, you know, chat about it. They're in between games and people talking about how, you know, laughing at Pena's or that now you're going to have to spend money on bunkers instead of just getting them for free, that sort of thing.
Dude, I didn't even care about that.
I know
that.
You did. All right. Thanks a lot for your call, man. Take care.
25%. Like
25 sweet. Minerals, man. It's half a marine.
It's a ton. It's a ton. Epic. We got Santiago joining us here tonight. Welcome to Inside the Game. What is up?
Hey, guys. Thank you for the show, by the way. Thank you for taking my call, too. I have a quick question for you guys. I work in a lot of programming, and I was wondering, you guys have a lot of typing, and you use your hands a lot. Do you take care of your hands somehow? Do you do something? Don't do any hard work like gym or anything like that? Because I feel like my hands are so damn important. I use them like ten hours a day, programming or playing StarCraft. So I was wondering if you guys have any advice for that.
Do you guys take care of your hands?
My hands are big, and they hurt all the time from playing. They get really sore, so I stretch a lot, like between games, after games, you know, whatever, whenever I get a chance, because my hands are always hurting if I'm playing for multiple hour sessions. So, yeah, I stretch my fingers individually. I rub my hands, you know, whatever I can do whenever I have downtime. I just try and move them and stretch them.
All right.
I'm really lucky. I played 12 hours a day for 2 years and still playing a ton. I've never had any hand or wrist problems. So I don't do anything at all about it. I probably should. I'm just lucky.
All right. I have pretty beefy hands, so I don't know if it's made me immune to playing this game nonstop for 13 years now or something like that, and never had an issue at all. Make sure that you, like, I don't know, part of it's, you're saying, like, you're asking if we avoid the gym. I know Greg and I are pretty, I'm sure Taylor does some stuff too, but we actually try to remain active. You want to do other things as well, because, I'm not even going to try to get into the science or medicine aspect of it, because I'm not going to pretend to understand arthritis or any of that shit, but, or what am I trying to say? What does TLO have?
Carpal tunnel.
As far as I'm concerned, it's moving your wrist around a lot. You want to keep the movement going with it, as far as I know. So,
you know,
you want to be more active.
And one thing to think about too is that you know, sometimes it's not so much the hands and the fingers as it is posture and having a decent chair. And you know, like not sitting down for extended periods of time, like actually getting up and just even walking around, like you know, you'd be surprised. Just I mean, I do the same thing, man. I work in IT during the day, so I sit in front of a freaking computer screen for 8 hours a day, and then when I want to come home and play, sometimes I'm just like, you know, exhausted. So just make sure that you're taking those breaks too. But
I think being active makes you better at everything, life, StarCraft. Like, I find when I run a lot and I'm in good shape, like, I'm just better at everything. So, you might as well.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's it, guys. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'll do that. You know, some stretching and all. So, appreciate the show, guys. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Adios.
Santiago. Take care. All right.
Sayonara.
All right, we got area code 575 calling into Inside the Game. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Two questions that I have. I was trying to come up with three, but I was unsuccessful.
Okay.
My first question is, and it's mainly just to keep me from wasting time on things, is in the early discussion with the Warp Prism, has, I guess in this case, a beam controller and showing it, any experimentation with using a warp prism as your energy, power source while you're waiting for pylons to come in. If you have one already, having it, since you have it lying around, if it's not, you're not doing any active harass right now, how to do the powering, and then, let's start with that.
Just using it as a pylon to reinforce your army before you have a pylon.
I think it means like power. So if you're like, well, I'm going to put a pylon there to power this robo, but I'll just use this warp. Well, I guess you'd need the robo before the warp prism, but whatever, I'm guessing, right? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Okay, here's a good example I can think of, just a map off the top of my head. Metalopolis, the current thing I've been seeing a lot with on the second expansion, where you have a little kind of wall at the far ramp, is rather than waiting for the pylon to warp in first before you build all the gateways there, is maybe using the warp prism as the power source. I don't know if anybody's actually... these are questions I come up with. I try to do searches on it and fail miserably at finding anybody who's already tested this stuff out, and so I try testing it, but
that might be,
you know, I don't want to sit there and reinventing the wheel.
Jeff?
Well, like, We're talking about a specific situation where you have a warp prism, but you don't have a probe handy, and you're looking to trim down your building of buildings by like 30 seconds, but occupying a warp prism. One of the aspects of this game that people don't really look at too much is that when you make something at that specific time, it has, like, it needs to function on some level through utility. Like, if you just make something and stick it in the corner, like, eventually I'll get to using that, like a warp prism, then you built it at an incorrect time, especially off a building like the robotics bay, or robotics facility, rather. So if I built a warp prism so that I could then take my third base 30 seconds faster with my gateways that I'm building because I want to use it to have my probe then come build the pylon after I've powered up and built two gateways, then that's the incorrect use of that building, because its field is also tiny, by the way, so I think you can only fit like one gateway as is. So maybe you're building a gateway faster.
I think you're assuming that you're going to have a robo and a warp prism before your expansion, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Getting a warp prism out that early and then just using it for it's not a worthwhile investment at all. It's a cute idea, but it's just...
I'm going to be a little bit presumptuous, and I would just tell you that your time is better spent mastering the things that actually matter as opposed to trying to find a warp prism strategy that nobody's thought of just yet.
Oh, no. My thinking behind it is more on the lines of warp prism, having them, you know, they're obviously better player defending the any sort of harassment that's trying, and then being able to make use of it, or whether, you know, should I throw it away still trying to do something in effect, or pull it back so I can have a cannon up if I see that they're doing some harass back using the warp prism, or maybe like helping to secure the third, things like that, as to if thinking in that context for energy is or for the power from the warp prism. My other question is involving creep spread. If one of the
things
I've noticed,
tumor and build this evolution chamber before the creep gets to it.
put down evolution chamber on overlord creep and then spread the creep tumor to it. There we go.
And then,
and then you use the overlord to drop it somewhere.
Go ahead, Connor. That was a great idea, though, Jeff.
Okay, sorry, I went off on things. Got a little bit lost there.
The creep tumor, creep.
Okay, one of the things again, this is a case of not seeing something being done and wondering if it's been tried and failed kind of a situation, is the use of queens as the dropping them. Like, you see overlords at far locations dropping out the creek, but I haven't really seen anybody, like, transporting a queen over to throw down a tumor, picking it back up, and dropping them down like that, as opposed to throwing the overlords around. And I don't know if that's just because it's a silly idea, but it seems there's a lot of times where I'm looking at games. I mean, most games don't get to the point where it would be amazing, but I see it. I'm like, that queen looks bored.
Queen dropping creep tumors? Queen dropping creep tumors?
Over in, like, far locations using the overlord, spreading the creep, and then dropping the tumor, and then moving to the next location.
What they did,
I've seen it done a few times, actually.
But what they did was is they used the creep tumor to block my third. So first off, you need a detector. Then once you kill the creep tumor, you have to wait like an extra, 30, 45 seconds for the creep to diminish. So it can actually block like a third or fourth expansion for quite a while. But it's a lot of time and effort involved in ferrying a queen and dropping a creep tumor. But it might pay off. Who knows?
Greg, is it worth the APM?
I've seen it done, though.
It's more the expensiveness of the lift upgrade. It's a 200 gas and a long upgrade. Getting that in time to block an expansion isn't really worthwhile, but it is a key tactic. Like, once you have drop, if you do have drop, then yes, it can be a good thing to do. But no, it's not worthwhile. It's not a tactic you should be focusing on doing. Just something you should keep in mind if you happens to have that opportunity.
All right, caller, thank you very much for calling in. Hopefully the next guy is the Micro Machines guys, because I need a little bit – I need the pace to pick up here a little bit. Felt like the answer was about 3 minutes and the question
was
six.
Imagine his experience with StarCraft 2, where he's like spending hours in the day like, how do I make this warp prison?
Personally, I think that guy is hitting his bong and like, Okay, bro. Oh, dude. It just came to me, man. Hold on. I'm gonna eventually get it. I'm gonna eventually explain it to you over the course of the next 18 minutes. But on minute 17, your fucking mind is gonna be blown. That's that guy. Next call.
You know, actually, if you do the queen drop creep tumor, if it's getting shot, you could drop the queen, transfuse the overlord, pick it back up, and then keep going. Do you ever think of that?
I don't know.
Greg, have you thought of that?
I was wrong. It is efficient. Everyone should rush to drop.
You can't die.
Now.
You can't die.
I don't know. I think we need
as long
to start.
As you got mana.
Someone right now is making a threat about your Evo Chamber idea. I think that's that's what's more important here.
Proxy.
We've got our next caller, Aaron, on the line. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hello. My name's Cytokinesis, Master League Random Player. And this is mainly for In Control, but for everyone else as well. Why don't we see more carriers? Because I think they're fucking sweet.
That's actually a pretty cool question. I think it's interesting. I went through 3 days where I built carriers a bunch, and there's like one day where I'm like, what? These things are amazing. Why aren't people making them? They're stupid. And then the next day I'd be like, I'm an idiot. This is a terrible unit. It's horrible. It's very situation and situational and it's unforgiving. The other problem with it is that most of the races, when they're facing Protoss, already have an anti-air unit in place because of the Colossus. So they either have Vikings or they have Corruptors or they have something taking into account the anti-air. So in Brood War, it used to be like, dun-dun-dun, I have six carriers. You're completely dead because you weren't preparing for that because you only had vultures and tanks or something like that. You're getting ready for ground armies. In StarCraft 2, it's like, dun-dun-dun, I have carriers. And like, oh, crap, I have to make more Vikings. Or thank God I already have these Marines. You know, like, it doesn't have the reveal ability. And then also because of the latency, you don't have the micro with the carrier. It doesn't have extra potential. It's just an A-move unit. So it's extremely expensive. It comes off the Stargate tech, which is already the more rare tech because it's not nearly as effective, generally speaking. And then most of the races already have an answer for it, so it's just not as good.
Anyone else want to comment on carriers? I also think they're awesome, and it's too bad that we don't see them as much. I guess I would, before Painters or Idra jump on this, Jeff, is there any, I'll just call it, tweaks that you feel could be done to a carrier that would make you want to use it more? Because I feel like that's always what we have to at least think about when we're talking about units like this.
I it sounds stupid to say this, but I would make them just like the Brood War ones were, where you could actually have micro with them, so it rewards a player of higher skill, but it also makes them worth their while, essentially. But it's not to say carriers are just carte blanche bad. There are situations. Against mech, Terran, it's quite good. The Thor is a terrible response to the carrier. It's really only the Viking or Marine. And then I don't know if any application against Zerg is good. I'm guessing Greg has never lost a game where carriers were involved.
I can't remember the last time I actually saw one.
Yeah, he's never even seen a freaking carrier. And then in PvP, I'm sure it's pretty cool, but who has time to make carriers in PvP?
And when you say micro in control, like give us an example.
Well, they're awesome. Because what they would do is they'd launch their interceptors. So when you did an attack command, they would launch their interceptors, but then you could already tell it to move back, but the interceptors would still continue off the attack for most part. So they had a tremendous range, and if the carrier never died, you could replenish the interceptors. So who cares about those as long as you have money? So they had the potential to kill a lot more just because they were harder to hit, they being the actual physical carrier. But in StarCraft 2, it's more like an attack animation, but it's still a direct attack. Like, you have to... They launch their interceptors, and there's, like, a certain kind of move away, but it's not nearly the same. They still get hit.
Okay. All right. Caller, thank you very much. Hopefully one day we will see those awesome carriers. Taking our next call, we've got area code 815 on the line. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, this is Nan Allergy. I'm a Zerg player. And I had a quick question about Heart of the Swarm, the new expansion, if you guys had any ideas on it, if they're going to add more units, and if Zerg needs a Cliff Walker.
I hope they bring back Reavers, Lurkers, and Vultures.
I don't know. Lurkers kind of overlap with Banelings and Banelings. I think we'll get a Hive Tech spellcaster for Zerg. Zerg has the least unit diversity and only one true spellcaster right now, and Hive Tech kind of sucks.
Jeff, what do you want? You want to be able to build Kerrigan as a hero Dark unit Archon, out of man. The Hive.
Yeah, Dark yeah. MFing Archon. I want Maelstrom. I want Mind Control. He's so sick.
I think it would be kind of awesome if they like retrofitted some of the units we're talking about and changed them up a bit, changed their abilities, changed the way they function. But
that sounds like a terrible idea, Taylor. I'm sorry.
I think it would be great.
Let's rebalance the entire game for Heart of the Swarm.
Are you? Let me.
Well, they're gonna have to do that anyway. Right?
They're gonna have to, right? Yeah. You're introducing new units. Okay. Okay.
We're talking about adding a kitchen or changing every room in the house. You tell me which is easier to do.
Well, I don't know if it's that easy in control. Come on.
Just paint and put up some more carpet. Get some new carpet and paint.
I mean, maybe it is, dude.
Yeah,
maybe it is.
Said, some more carpet paint.
maybe it is. All right. I don't know. I really look forward to see how we're going to handle it, but I want to ask an additional question to our pros here.
I want a higher tactical setting. I want super ultra.
Super extreme ultra?
Super extreme ultra. I want shit to bounce.
Are you guys looking forward to having to acclimate yourselves to yet another game?
Sure.
Yeah.
It can only make Zerg better, so yeah.
I don't count your eggs.
I'm actually really excited to see what they do with the bunker, to be honest with you, in Heart of the Swarm. I want to see what changes they make.
Wait,
the
why? Because you think we're going to actually get that fucking add-on that puts a machine gun on the top of it so you don't even need a Marine inside? Be like, watch my SCV rush against the Zerg who's fast expanding.
They're going to add morale to StarCraft 2, so there's like a morale indicator at the top left, and like... You have to get wives for your soldiers, and there's like backstory and shit. And like,
it's like
your
rank Marines
for diversity and your second expansion is low.
They're only doing two damage. Increase it. All right, thanks, caller. Appreciate it.
Auto turret on top of bunker upgrade,
dude. It was in. It was already in. Whatever the last game was,
doors could reanimate
one
in the beta.
Yeah,
in the alpha.
Oh, I remember that. That was kind of cool.
Insane.
Thor's reanimating was a bit much.
Insane. All right.
You should bring back the Colossus doing twice as much damage as it does now.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I shot like a volley of lasers and killed everything.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet the idiot that put that
up with the Colossus.
Warp gate research in like 120 or something like that.
It was so fast.
It was faster than that. It was like 80 or something silly.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. That's back when the days that Idra dreams about where roaches were one supply.
Idra was Protoss in those days. We actually
Man. He was the one bitching about it.
No, that was before warp gate all-ins were like figured out. I switched at a terrible timing. I missed out on all the Protoss fun stuff.
The Zergs are glad you did, though. So we got Blake on the line now. Blake, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? All right, maybe Blake... Hightailed it out of here. Sorry, Blake. We've got Jacob on the line. Jacob, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. I was just wondering what you guys think. I know we have, like, all three races here, and I was wondering what you guys think other races could do that they're not using. And I don't want to hear In Control talk about how we should have creep tumors put everywhere, dropped by overlords, but just wondering what things that you guys... would like to see from other races that would actually be useful.
Ghosts?
Is that what you said, Andrew?
Yeah, I agree with Greg. I think ghosts are really underused. I think hallucinate, scouting. Some people do it, but I think people could afford to do it a lot more. I mean, phoenixes are unbelievably quick, good scouting units.
Burrowed Banelings, ZBT. Yeah. There's absolutely no reason every Zerg isn't doing that every single game they get Banelings.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. When I do get Baneling bombed, it's just like, there goes half my Marines.
Yeah, we watched a good one last night, actually. We talked a little bit about that.